You're listening to Searching for Solutions with Walter Senzik.
Welcome to Searching for Solutions, powered by First Ontario Credit Union, enabling a community of understanding through open conversations. Thanks for taking the time to join me today. And whether you're having a coffee, a tea, maybe you're having that first glass of water in the morning, and you're thinking, what does that have to do with what we're going to be talking about today? Well, water is that one precious resource that allows everything around us and including us exist. It is a vital resource in the world. And I'm going to be talking with a professor who specializes in water resource and water resilience. And her name's Dr. Julia Baird. She's a Canada Research Chair, an associate professor at Brock University. And I wanted to start looking at a solution-oriented lens when it comes to the climate crisis. And, you know, whether you call it climate change, global warming, the climate crisis, it's real. It's happening. There's scientific data to show that it is happening. And I got to tell you this, there's very few deniers now who are saying climate change isn't real. And we need to really focus on what can we do as communities, what can we do as individuals to help be a part of the solutions around pushing back at climate change and the reasons for climate change. And some of them are going to be controversial, and you know, we're not going to be necessarily talking about things like taxation here today, but we'll probably talk about it in the future. But we're going to start looking at how can we as individuals be a part of what is going to be, and if not already is, one of the most dominant issues facing the world. And that's a really big issue when you think about it from a global context. And sometimes it gets too big. And I've had a number of conversations over the last little while where people have said the issues around climate change and the climate crisis are too big for me to make a difference. And that's why I wanted to start with a discussion with Dr. Julia Baird. She's studying the empathy part of climate change and water resilience, and how do we get humans, how do we get people in focused and seeing that they can play a role in the solutions around this. And so empathy is going to be a part of, I think, what we're going to be talking about here today on Searching for Solutions. And, you know, there's a lot of work being done, and the science behind climate change is solid. It's deep. It runs deep, and encourage you to do your research, but there's also a lot of misinformation out there, and be cautious in your research. And, you know, it's easy for someone to launch a YouTube channel. It's easy for someone to, you know, be a doctor in something that may not be even environmental oriented or data or mathematical background. They could be a doctor of medicine and be writing about climate change, and they could have a perspective that it's not real, it's just a natural cycle. And yet you have 89-90% of the scientists in the world saying climate change is real, we got to pay attention to it. I'm leaning towards the 90%. Just telling you right now, I'm leaning towards that side of the equation. If there's others on the 10% or less, I'm not leaning there. The real work has been done. And so when we look at things like declaring a climate emergency in communities, what does that look like? You can't just declare a climate emergency and then not put the dollars on the table to show how communities can push back at climate change. We're not going to do solar adoption on top of the roofs of city buildings. What does climate emergency mean? If we're not going to move from fossil fuel to battery-operated equipment, what does the climate emergency mean? If we're not going to put in place different approaches to the reforestation of our urban centers, what does the climate emergency mean? So we're going to be getting into those topics as well on Searching for Solutions. But today I wanted to start with a discussion about the climate crisis. What is it, and what are the causes? And also, how can we reframe how we look at it so it's not this big, massive issue that really individuals can't have an impact on pushing back on. So this is Searching for Solutions, powered by First Ontario Credit Union, enabling a community of understanding through open conversations. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Searching for Solutions with Walter Senzik.
Welcome back to Searching for Solutions, powered by First Ontario Credit Union, enabling a community of understanding through open conversations. As I was talking about before the break, my guest today is Dr. Julia Baird, and really wanted to have a discussion with someone who intimately understands what's happening with the climate. And from climate change to climate crisis to global warming, the impacts that it has, and the specialty areas in which we can start to gain a better understanding. I really believe that it's going to take all of us to work in many different ways to address the issues around climate change. And it is a crisis. There's opportunities for solutions, and it's really focusing in on those areas. What can communities do? What can individuals do? And that's why I'm looking forward to this discussion today with Dr. Julia Baird from Brock University. She's a Canada Research Chair in Human Dimensions of Water Resources and Water Resilience, an associate professor jointly appointed to the Environmental Sustainability Research Center in the Department of Geography at Brock University. And Dr. Baird, first of all, welcome to the show. Great to see you.
Yeah, thanks very much. Pleased to be here.
Your interest in water and the work that you've done today, where did that start? What was your foundation of, I want to focus in on water and water resources as my career in academia?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I'm going to take you back a few decades, actually. So I grew up on a farm in the prairies. And around the kitchen table, the conversation was almost always about water, whether we didn't have enough or we had too much or we had the right amount, but we were expecting that that would change any moment. And so water, you know, was kind of infused into my daily life as a child. And I think that that's something that I've carried with me throughout my career. I started studying agricultural sciences at West, and eventually landed during my PhD on a focus on water policy and agriculture. So I kind of married, you know, the agricultural science side of what I knew and with my interest in how people make decisions, and especially around water, which is, you know, arguably our most precious resource. We can't live without it. Our ecosystems can't function without it. And so that kind of drove me towards a focus on water, but still kind of maintaining that farm background that was so important to me.
And I love that, because here in the Niagara area and throughout southwestern Ontario, there's a strong agricultural community as well. And there has been summers where there has been an absence of rain, and it's created droughts. And it's really highlighted, especially in the last number of years, highlighted the importance of access to water and how that part is such a key to food security moving forward. And so, you know, with your research as the Canada Research Chair, talk a bit about the Canada Research Chair. And I know the specific area of study that you're working on is human dimensions of water resilience. What does that mean?
Yeah, so good question. It's a mouthful. The Canada Research Chair program is a federally funded program. It supports what they call kind of emerging researchers who have the potential to make, international contributions to research in a specific area. And my area is the people side of water. So how can we as individuals, we as communities, as governments, support water sustainability in the short term and also in the long term. And so that's my focus.
And that's why I really wanted to have this discussion here on Searching for Solutions, because of the importance of water. And when we look at climate change and we look at what's happening in the world and in our communities, and seeing how important the role is. And, you know, from water, the cleanliness of water, being able to drink water, being able to have access to water for agriculture, but also on the other side, the floods, the rising waters, and what it means to transportation, what it means to low-lying communities. So there's water is really playing a role when it comes to climate change. And I just want to start with the basics on people talk about climate change, they talk about global warming, they talk about a climate crisis, and there's these interchangeable words. Are they the same in terms of their scale and scope, or from your perspective, how do we get to a basis understanding of here's what's happening in the climate and here's why it's important?
Yeah. So there are different terms that people use. I think they're all generally okay. They all kind of have slightly different meanings. So if we talk about global warming, that's talking about global temperature increases over time. If we talk about climate change, it's broader. It's not only, you know, how the climate's changing, but also kind of some of the impacts that come from that temperature change. And the climate crisis, I mean, I can confidently say that we are in a crisis. So, all of those terms are appropriate depending on the specific situation. You know, we might use slightly different terms, but they're all.
And it's interesting, Dr. Baird, because climate change, we've been talking about it for a long time, and probably the academic community, they've been probably talking about it for 40 plus years in terms of the more community oriented piece, maybe the last 25, 30 years. And in terms of global warming, we've, at least as society, come to understand it, but the crisis piece, and you had said it's definitely, we are in a crisis. What do you mean by this is now a crisis period?
Yeah. So, there are big international and, you know, governments that are calling it a crisis. So we can take our cues from them because they take their cues from science, as I do. Where that comes from is that we know that we're already a warming planet. We've warmed more than 1 degree already in the last century. We know that we want to keep warming below 2 degrees Celsius from kind of 1900 levels to mitigate the worst impacts of climate change. But staying below that 2 degrees warming is pretty unlikely given kind of the trajectory that we currently have as a planet. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is a United Nations body for assessing climate science, provides regular assessments, and they put out a synthesis report last year on climate change. And they say that on our current trajectory, we could be at least 3 degrees warmer by 2100, which is not that far away. And that means that future generations are going to experience extremely kind of disastrous, catastrophic impacts from climate change, with severe variations in extreme precipitation and droughts, sea level rise that causes forced mass migrations, food insecurity, heat waves, storms, and wildfires. And all of those things obviously have impacts on human health and enormous impacts on our economy. I think that qualifies as a crisis. And just an interesting note that there's actually a course called The Climate Crisis at Brock, and my colleague Mike Pizarik teaches that one. So I leaned on him a little bit to give me some of the specifics around the data on the climate crisis.
Well, I wanted to talk about that because I do find that I think it's generally agreed upon in the larger population that there's a climate crisis taking place. The reasons for it, there's a smaller subsection group of individuals who may say that it's just a natural evolution of the Earth's cycles. And just, you know, briefly talk about your research and how this isn't just part of a natural cycle, that there is actually human influence on this.
Yeah. So my research doesn't focus on climate science directly, but it is informed by climate science. So we start from the understanding that the science is clear that the climate change is happening and it's caused by humans. And there are, a lot of scientists that have been doing a lot of work to demonstrate that with evidence. There's a lot of misinformation out there around climate change and why it might be happening. Things like natural cycles are implicated in it, like El Nino and La Nina episodes. But those just essentially distribute the existing heat that exists within the planet, in the atmosphere and in the oceans differently, depending on what kind of a cycle we're in. There's orbital cycles that can be implicated that, people say, we're coming out of an ice age. That is actually not the case. We were sliding into an ice age and we are now not because of global warming. And the sun's variable energy, that's another one that often is flagged as kind of the culprit in climate change, but it is not, I can assure you. None of these things really explain what's happening. Human factors certainly do. The burning of fossil fuels, deforestation, other activities are increasing the atmospheric concentration of greenhouse gases. And the most important of those, but not the only one, is carbon dioxide. That creates a greenhouse effect, which means that, if you've ever been in a greenhouse, and a lot of us in the Niagara region see greenhouses all over the place, we've been there, it's hot in there. And it's hot in there because it's meant to, there's mechanisms in place to keep the heat in. And that's what atmospheric greenhouse gases do, is they let the sun's energy in to our atmosphere, but they want to hold it there. They don't want to let it back out. And so that's why we're seeing warming, and it shows up differently. It doesn't always mean that every single day of our life will be warmer than it was before, but overall our planet absolutely is warming.
Yeah. And we've seen the statistics on that. We've seen that 2023 was the largest, the hottest a year on record globally. And then you're right, some people will look and go, well, it wasn't that warm in my part of the world. And the reality is we're looking at it from a global perspective. The hard part, Dr. Baird, is really getting to an understanding where, yes, it's a crisis, but an individual can do something about it. And I often find in what a lot of the literature now is talking about, when the human approach to climate change, is that you have an increase in anxiety. You have a lot of people who are starting to have a sense of climate anxiety that, as you said, the more severity of the storms, the more the severity of the flooding and the droughts and the deep colds that are happening, it does create this anxiety of what does the future hold? And so you get almost a paralysis where people they don't know what to do. And so on Searching for Solutions, we're really starting to have discussions around climate change and the climate crisis to figure out what can be done. And so, just off the top, before we head into the break, from your area of research, water is such an important part of our well-being and how we exist on this planet. From your perspective, is the problem too big for an individual to really matter?
No. It is not too big. It is big, but we matter. Individuals matter. And I want to make that so clear, because I know, I see it in myself sometimes, feeling anxious and feeling overwhelmed, in my colleagues and in students and in the community. We read about these sorts of stories in the newspapers too, but absolutely there are things that we can do as individuals to have an impact. And I think it's important to realize that the things that we do locally matter. We may not influence international policy. We're not all Greta Thunberg, but we all can play a role and we can have an impact. And there's, some really cool research that I've been doing that shows some of the ways that we can do that.
Well, we're going to get into that after the break. And I'm talking with Dr. Julia Baird from Brock University, a Canada Research Chair in Human Dimensions of Water Resources and Water Resilience. And a perfect way as we start to get into discussions about solutions when it comes to how do we address the climate crisis in our communities. It is a global issue, but it is one that has a dramatic impact on local communities, as we've seen, not just here in Niagara, but around the world. So It's going to be a great discussion coming out of the break. This is Searching for Solutions, powered by First Ontario Credit Union, enabling a community of understanding through open conversations. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Searching for Solutions with Walter Senzik. You're listening to Searching for Solutions with Walter Senzik.
Welcome back to Searching for Solutions, powered by First Ontario Credit Union, enabling a community of understanding through open conversations. I'm talking with Dr. Julia Baer from Brock University, Canada Research Chair in Human Dimensions of Water Resources and Water Resilience. And it's really important that we're having this discussion today and looking at what's happening in the world, trying to get a sense of the climate crisis and how we as individuals and communities can work to try and not just adapt, but to push back. And there's those parallel tracks that we're on right now, where we have to look at adaptation and figure out what that looks like. But we also don't want to focus on adaptation to the point where we're ignoring that we can actually continue to try and push back at what has been the causes of the climate crisis, but at the same time, how we can start to repair some of the damage that has been done by humans to the ecosystem, this whole integrated ecological system that has allowed human species to live on this beautiful place called Earth for millenniums that I can't even count how far back. So Dr. Baird, just before the break, we were talking about what the individual can do and if the problem is just actually too big. And we talk about climate anxiety and people kind of like just putting up the blinders and saying, I can't do anything about this. But there's approaches that can enable people. And so can you talk about some of the things that you've done through your research that you're able to point to and say, hey, you know, if we focus on these areas, this is where local impact can make a difference.
Yeah. And I teach a fourth year water resources class at Brock. And in the first lecture, we talk about eco-anxiety, climate anxiety, because it just presents so often, you know, when we have these conversations. And the one thing that I recommend to students above anything else is talking to other people, finding your community, and sharing how you're feeling with others. That's really important. And I would just say, you know, if anybody out there is feeling climate anxiety or climate grief to the point where they feel that it's impacting their daily lives, it's also very strongly recommended that they connect with a therapist or somebody who can help them with that, because we do see evidence of that happening with some people. But yeah, this idea that, you know, you kind of engage your network can be personally helpful in terms of dealing with that feeling of anxiety and hopelessness or helplessness. But the other really cool thing about engaging your network is that we're finding that by talking to other people about the sorts of issues that you're interested in and the sorts of things that you're learning about, you know, what you might be able to do as an individual, you can have a huge influence over what happens in your community. And we all have networks. So, you know, I have a network at work. I have a friend network. People may have networks in their places of worship or, you know, around hobbies that they do or whatever. So we all have our people that we like to talk to. And we used to believe that, you know, if we take a network and we kind of think about it as a spider web, that the people that are in the middle, those people that are, you know, connected to the most other people are the ones that really matter. And we want those influencers to be the ones to spread a message so that it gets through the entire network. But what we're finding, and there's a book out there that was written by Damian Santola, who's an academic out of the US, called Change, How to Make Big Things Happen, is finding that actually those people who are maybe a little less connected, maybe more on the periphery of that spider web of connections, can actually influence change more quickly than somebody who's in the middle, who has a lot of connections, but maybe they're not as, you know, trusting, They're not as strong. But, you know, those of us who maybe have a few, you know, just a few close buddies, and we talk about these things with them, and they have a few close buddies, and they talk about these things with them. That's how we're starting to see change really take effect across an entire community. And it's, to me, like, really inspiring to know that, and to think about how we engage in our community as an individual. We don't have to be that influencer. We can just, you know, be the regular person in our neighborhood who's trying to do something good.
And so, and completely agree with that model, as I had spent a considerable amount of time, obviously, in my role as mayor of St. Catharines, but I was also the chair of the Great Lakes St. Lawrence Cities Initiative, which was a binational organization with over 150 mayors. And really, a lot of impact when we focused our efforts. And I think that's a key here, because one of the areas that we struggle with is that the issue of climate crisis and climate change is so large that it's hard to get our heads individually around what is it that I can do, or what is it that we can do in a community. And, you know, Dr. Baird will give you an example. City of St. Catharines, we declared a climate emergency and everyone rallied around that. But then when it came time to spend resources to actually take that emergency and put an action plan to it, you get counselors sitting around saying, whoa, we can't spend that money over there. And it's like, well, but you all declared a climate emergency. And that's where I get stuck. And I'm wondering if, you know, you've got some examples or how you move from, you can declare an emergency, but there isn't that next step where there's the critical piece, what I call the heavy lifting. You're going to have to invest in these. And it seems like, is empathy the way to go? Like, how do you build the emotion? I guess that's my question to you. How do you build that emotion around these areas where it's an emotion that leads to action rather than paralysis?
Yeah. And that's kind of the, you know, the big research project that I'm working on now, is this idea of empathy and how it relates to water sustainability. And it's through kind of the individual and how we relate to each other, and how we relate to our environment. And it's absolutely critical that we have empathy. And the really exciting part of that is that empathy is something that we can build in people. It's not, you know, an inherent trait that we have for life. We're born with it or we aren't. This is something that we can build if we don't have it, but a lot of people do have a good kind of healthy amount of empathy that already exists within them. So it's a bit of a, you know, opportunity to trigger that empathy, but also, you know, finding ways to build empathy. And that's something that I'm working on, right now. If I get a great team.
And it goes, I want to talk a bit more about the empathy piece, because we, as government, so I'll give you an example here in the Niagara area. There was a drought, I think, in 2017 that put a lot of strain on the tender fruit industry and the grape industry, led to a group coming together talking about irrigation, expanding irrigation in what would be the Beamsville Bench area, or going, I guess that would be west, going into the west area of Niagara. And that was 2017. We're 2024. We haven't really moved the needle on that, and it gets stuck in bureaucracy. And yet, at that moment, that catalytic moment of we need this, there is that empathy of, if we don't get water to the farms will lose the crops. The crops will then not be able to go to market, and you're going to have an economic disaster, and you're going to have an environmental disaster. And so that really, but because the drought was just very fixed period of time, maintaining that momentum really was a struggle. And just, again, from your perspective on something like, we bring in the federal government brings in something like a carbon tax, and it's polarized and people see it as they're taking out of my pocket, but they then at the same time, they're looking going, but the government's got to do something about the climate crisis. How do you reframe some of these discussions so that it's not about, you know, who's got their hands in my pocket, but it's more about, we're doing something that's making a difference?
Yeah, exactly. I know. And it is a real challenge to affect change, especially when there are dollars involved. And I'm sure you understand that much better than even I do. So what a concept that we use in our work that I think is really important, maybe to bring in here, is the idea of leverage points. And what that tells us is that there are different places within like a system. So we can think about the Niagara region as a system. There's all sorts of different activities that are happening, you know, economic activities, agriculture, manufacturing, you know, tourism. We've got people, we've got a built environment, we have our ecosystem that we want to make sure is healthy and supports our well-being well into the future. There's all sorts of things, you know, within this system. And within that system, we can kind of pull on different levers, and some of them are more effective than others. So some of the most effective levers that can help us engage some of the other levers are things like how we understand the world around us and how we understand our own system and how it operates. And so, you know, I take the approach that we live within a what we call a social ecological system, which means that we interact with our natural environment in many, many different ways. And it's really hard to separate people from ecosystems because we're so interconnected. And if we understand the world in that way, and we understand that climate change is real and happening and caused by humans, then, you know, the suite of options that opens up for how we address that and what sorts of things we want from our system is different than if we think about the world, you know, from a very compartmentalized perspective where, you know, I am a person, I, you know, rule over nature. I know that there's going to be technology to fix everything. So those are, you know, if we think about the world that way, then the suite of options for how we kind of make decisions in that environment is very different. And so empathy can help us move kind of towards that idea of what do we want for our system in the future, and not only for ourselves, but also for other people and also for our ecosystems that, you know, we absolutely need in order to support us. Without our natural environment, Niagara is not going to thrive. I feel like, you know, empathy is one of those missing ingredients. There's a lot of people that have been talking about an empathy deficit in our world right now. And so the work that I'm doing is trying to think about how we address that deficit, essentially.
And so, and again, very, very well said, because I do think there is an empathy deficit for sure. And for a whole host of reasons. And looking at it from a climate lens, and how do we see that what we do today, it will make a difference far enough into the future? And I think that's where even I struggle with, is the difference that we make today, we're not going to see necessarily that downstream impact, because if we can make the difference today, it's actually going to improve things. It's only when we see a catastrophe that we go, I wish we would have done more. When we see the forest burning down, when we see the floods wiping out communities, when we see a massive snowstorm decimating areas of the world, and we go, I wish we would have done more. And, you know, from your perspective, for the listener listening today, you know, what's your message to them about, instead of wishing you could have done more, how would you reframe that?
Yeah, I mean, there's probably people in the past who would look at us now and say, I wish I would have done more. And so we can be that generation, those generations that change that. And I think by trying to take the perspective. So when we talk about empathy, what we're talking about is recognizing emotions in others in different situations and understanding those emotions and sometimes even feeling them ourselves. And that just fundamentally changes how we're going to interact with other people and the sorts of issues that we prioritize. There's a really cool video that was developed by Stanford that shows how somebody moves into homelessness from having a home and a job and a happy, healthy life. And by watching that video, you know, it's meant to kind of evoke the emotions of the person that's going through that experience. And as somebody watching it, I can tell you, you know, somebody who has empathy, I felt it. And that changes my perspective on homelessness. So I think, you know, we can start to do the same sorts of things, hopefully, with the notion of climate change. And even if it's in the future, even if it's not here in Niagara, it might be, you know, in another country, a country that's threatened by sea level rise to the point where people may have to migrate off of, you know, an island and not be there anymore. How that feels for them, and to be able to, you know, think about that from our perspective and care about that, then I think, you know, the sorts of decisions that we see as important may change, or the options that we see as feasible may change.
Dr. Baird, thank you for taking the time to join me here on Searching for Solutions. The work that you're doing around water resources and water resilience is going to have and continues to have an impact on how we see water. It is the most important resource that we have here. Provides the opportunity for us to live as human beings, and other species are able to coexist with us on this planet because of access to water and the role that plays. And so I know we're going to be having future discussions, and looking forward to learning and watching the work that you do have an impact on not just our community, but the world around us as well. So thanks for taking the time today.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity.
All right, this is Searching for Solutions, powered by First Ontario Credit Union, enabling a community of understanding through open conversations. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Searching for Solutions with Walter Senzik. You're listening to Searching for Solutions with Walter Senzik.
Thank you for tuning in to Searching for Solutions, powered by First Ontario Credit Union, enabling a community of understanding through open conversations. So I really hope you got something from today's discussion with Dr. Julia Baird from Brock University. And, you know, water is this precious resource. And while we didn't focus 100% on the solutions around water, Dr. Baird's research around empathy and how it helps to have it, it is that facilitator to get us towards policy development that will do the kind of heavy lifting around water protection, water resilience, and on a more global perspective on how that change in framework on empathy can help unlock some of this paralysis that I think we're feeling as individuals. Look, I get it. Climate change is a huge issue. And when you saw it in the summertime, the raging fires in Northern Ontario and Quebec and in BC and Yukon, the displacement of people, when you see the droughts that are taking place, when you look at what's happening in the Okanagan Valley in the last couple of weeks where their temperatures have stayed at minus 30 with the potential to completely decimate the grape and wine industry in the Okanagan Valley. When you look around the world and you see what's happening with drought, when you see what's happening with rising water, yeah, you know what? I get the anxiety piece. I really do. But it's not something that we can stop looking for the solutions. As individuals, we can make a difference. And so, you know, at the top of the show, I talked about declaring a climate emergency. What we need to see is more action from elected officials, from community groups. There's a number of environmental groups in Ontario that are working hard in communities. And what I'm starting to see is moving away from finger pointing, and the finger pointing of you're not doing enough from climate activist groups. They're now coming to this table and saying, what can we do to help facilitate the solutions around climate change? And that needs to be the core, the center of the discussion, is what can we do together? The days of pointing, you know, if you want to, we got to stop that cycle of, well, the oil and gas industry, they're evil, we can't listen to them. Well, they're working on ways to do carbon capture. Okay, so let's look at that. We got to look at how do we incentivize companies and communities to remove as much fossil usage as possible from their operations? How do we incentivize households to get away from fossil fuels? These are all things. Now, you know, we can have discussion about taxations, we can have discussion about incentives, but what we can't do is say, you're wrong, I'm right. You're wrong, I'm right on how we need to do this approach or how we need to put all the tools on the table and figure out which one is adaptable today, which one can we do today, which one is something that is possible today. And when I was thinking about the show, I was thinking about the adoption of organics as part of our waste collection. And, you know, at the beginning, people didn't understand, why are we doing organics? You know, we should just put everything in one big plastic bag and send it to the dump. But we realized pretty quick that there's a couple of things around organics. It is reusable. We can take that organic material and put it back into use somewhere else, much like recycling. And we're running out of landfill space. So every time we take more out of the landfill, which is where the waste is going, the less we have to create more landfill space. And so there was a cost to it. There was an increased cost in waste management by introducing organics into the stream of collection. And yet there wasn't as much pushback as what we're seeing in other areas where there's increases of, say, something like a carbon tax, where you really get this polarization. But just like with waste management, with the collection, there was an increased cost to you as a homeowner. You just didn't see it as much, but it was also explained why it was important. And I think that's some of the pieces that we miss here. And that's something that we're going to be talking about on Searching for Solutions, is why do we need to do what we do? And how is it going to make a positive difference? Because I'm telling you right now, I'm not thinking about my future. I'm thinking about my grandkids, grandkids' futures. Because as we know now today with the studies, it is going to be increasingly difficult for them to live in a world that we are living in today and enjoying, because it's going to be much harsher. How can we do something today that lessens what that impact will be in the future? I think we owe it to future generations. So we're going to be having more of those discussions here on Searching for Solutions. I just want to say thank you for tuning in. If you have any questions, reach out to me on my social media channels. You can get me on X. You can get me on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Threads. And you can also email me, walter@waltersenzik.com. Always love engaging with our listeners. And thanks again for taking the time to listen. This is Searching for Solutions, powered by First Ontario Credit Union, enabling a community of understanding through open conversations. Special shout out to the producer, Greg Campagna, doing an amazing job. Take care of yourself, folks. We can all make a difference.
You're listening to Searching for Solutions with Walter Senzik.